You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome in to another edition of RJ Bell's Dream Preview College Basketball Edition. I am AJ Hoffman, joined by Griffin Warner. Griffin, how you doing, bud?
I'm great, man. 2-0 for the podcast last week. Can't do much better than that, eh?
It feels a lot better. Like this, the energy I feel like is going to be better on this show than the 0-2 show. That was a bad feeling coming in. We both lost our best bet. I was like, ugh. But now we're positive. Everything's positive right now, guys. So, Wyoming, boy, that number, I gave out 2.5 because that was the number at the time we were recording on Sunday night for a Monday game. And by the time I got up, by the time I got to the office, it was 4.5. I said, oh, boy. And then it got up to 5, and then it got pushed back down to 3.5. But the good thing is, no matter what number you got it at, Wyoming covered. That was not really in doubt. And then you had an outright winner with an underdog with Providence. So I would say that's a good thing, my friend.
Yeah, you know, happy about it. Good for good old PC. Started off pretty shaky, but ultimately seeing them – Ken Pom projected +4, close, I think, 2.5, but they got all the way to the finish line.
I'll tell you what, one of the games that I was looking at, and I ended up choosing another one, but one of the games I was looking at when we looked for our best bet was I kind of like Rhode Island Rhode Island against Providence. They play, I want to say, Saturday.
Yep.
But I think Rhode Island's got some good matchup things going against that team, and they'll probably be getting 4 or 5 points. That may be something to look at.
It's a big rivalry in the smallest state. Happy to say that's where I grew up. Still have 401 area code, but you know, PC, I think it goes back and forth, the rivalry, and URI's got some really, really tough twin towers inside, and I don't really know if PC is going to be able to score on the inside. And when you force them to make jump shots, they did it against Texas Tech, but I don't know if that's really the game that Ed Cooley wants to play.
Well, let's get into the games that everybody's going to be watching this week. And we'll start with Iowa and Purdue, two teams that we looked at this last week, and Iowa survived against Virginia, and you know, Virginia kind of got their game against Iowa. It was the real first taste of Iowa against someone who had a pulse, and they won the game, did not cover. So for our purposes, they failed. So I don't know. I didn't have any skin in the game, but I would say that Iowa showed some vulnerability. Whereas we talked about Florida State and maybe their athleticism maybe could slow down Purdue. No, Purdue is a juggernaut, friends. This is a wrecking ball right now. And unless you are the tip of the top, I don't know that you're hanging with this team. And we're projecting Iowa +9 at Purdue. The only team that's played Purdue within 9 all year is Villanova. And that was on a neutral, not in Mackey, where this game is. And, you know, it just felt like Iowa, they gave up a lot of offensive rebounds to Virginia. And now you're facing basically the best rebounding team in the country, at least in the Big Ten, certainly. They lead the Big Ten in offensive rebounding, defensive rebound, rebound margin. Size is certainly a problem for this team. I mean, it's almost impossible to have the size that they have. And Iowa's going to be undersized in the Big Ten all season long, but this is where it's going to be the most glaring with, you know, Caleb First and Trevion Williams, both nearly 7 foot, Zach Edey, 7'4", like 300, and they can play. Like, they're not just big stiffs. And I think the other thing that I took away from the Iowa game was, and most nights you would say, oh, they gave up 74 points. They won 75-74, and you would think, oh, it's a decent defensive showing, until you consider they were playing Virginia. And 74 points is the most Virginia scored all year. And now they've got to face the most efficient offense in the country and a team that's even stronger than Iowa on the defensive end. So this feels like a smash spot for Purdue to me. The last four games in Mackey for Iowa, they're 0-4 with an average margin of 24 per game. And it's starting to look like it's the best team that Painter's had. I think they just kind of blow the doors off Iowa here. What do you think?
Well, I'm glad that you eventually passed the mic over. I understand waxing poetic or whatever that phrase is. Purdue's great. Honestly, I was planning to watch Florida State, Purdue, and was planning really to kind of clue in maybe late first half, early second half, and it was too much of a blowout. I stayed on what the other games I was watching. I don't really have a lot more to say. I mean, Purdue, I think they showed some signs last year of maybe outperforming what was expected of them in Big Ten conference play, and then have really only kept doing that and then some. I thought that maybe their backcourt, and that would be a lot weaker than it's shown so far. We knew with the big guys inside that they were going to be really strong there. But ultimately, at Mackey, really, really scary to go against them there. And then when you talk about Iowa, I did watch that game against Virginia. Bohannon was incredible, borderline unconscious if he wasn't like the leading three-point shooter in all of NCAA basketball, Division I, I think. But it helps when you play there for the same school for 6 years or whatever he's done. I mean, I liked what I saw from Iowa, that they took a bunch of punches because they had a big lead, surrendered it, and then kind of came back to win. Against a Virginia team that really hasn't been performing so far this season. So take that with a grain of salt, because they're playing an inferior Virginia, not the same Virginia we're used to that won the national championship a few years ago. But yeah, even getting 9 points, I mean, I think you're hoping, if you're backing Iowa, that they shoot really well. I just have no idea how they stop Purdue inside, even if they do shoot well.
So I think we kind of see the same thing here. This is not really a great matchup for Iowa. And I no matter what, like, even if you don't want to bet Purdue, I wouldn't get in the way of them right now. I wouldn't want to put money on the counter against Purdue right now. It just seems like a bad choice.
I don't think we're going to be selling Purdue high anytime soon.
Okay, let's take a look at Kansas and St. John's in a neutral, semi-neutral. It's in New York City. And I was tempted to like St. John's here. They feel like they play up or down to the competition. And I'll like, for full disclosure, I'm 1-1 betting on John's this year. I had them against Indiana. They covered, almost won outright. And then their next game against Fairleigh Dickinson, I was like, oh man, the way they push this tempo, they're going to just blow the doors off a bad defensive team. And they really struggled against them. And then they struggled against St. Francis and NJIT. They had to go to overtime to beat. And I'm like, wait a minute. So now maybe the question to me is the Indiana game the rogue data point? Like, is that the game that was like, oh, well, they played well in one game, versus now we've had three in a row where they looked like shit against, you know, bad teams, like not kind of good teams, not teams that are on their, like, that are their peers. These are bad teams that are hanging with them. You know, Mike Anderson's going to press, because that's what he does. And I went back to when he was at Mizzou and said, oh, how'd he do against Bill Self then? Bill Self 9-1 against Mizzou when Anderson was in Columbia. So given that the Jayhawks are only turning the ball over 10 times a game. They seem like they're kind of built to handle that pressure. And I certainly don't want to, back St. John's right now, the way they're looking. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, it's hard to really want to go against Kansas. I mean, definitely some demerits for losing to Dayton, who started the season off sleepwalking, I guess is the only way we can describe it. Pretty surprised about that one, though. Kind of looked like an act of God. Ball bounced as high as I've probably ever seen a game-winning shot that went in off the rim and somehow settled in. Dayton crowd went nuts. It was a really, really big environment, too. Go ahead.
Does the win, like the Belmont win after that, does that kind of maybe seem like it's not as bad of a loss for Kansas, like Dayton beating, like winning the whole tournament?
You know, I feel like we're in a time of the year, and I feel like this happens with college kids, where there's just sometimes there are losses that are really inexplicable. I do think that for futures sakes and bracket sakes, it's a good idea to pay attention to who some of these really, really good teams lose to, because I feel like there are just some games that you shouldn't be in a position to lose. I think Dayton's got, like I said, they travel really well to the like tournaments before the season, really, or before conference play. And that maybe had something to do with it. Plus maybe looking past them after, I mean, you wouldn't blame Kansas for doing that after seeing what Dayton had lost to early in the season. It's one of those things though, where I think that's a cause for concern maybe in the future, but I feel like it's almost with the really good teams, like, sometimes things just happen and you end up taking a loss that you shouldn't. I guess it doesn't seem as bad because Dayton won the next, but ultimately I think from where I sit, there was a pretty good bounce back effort against Iona, winning by double digits. I mean, they were expected to, but that's kind of the problem, I think, for where Kansas sits is that they're not really going to be, just winning isn't enough for them. And that's hard to do those sort of things and go through a schedule. I think they'll have Big 12 play coming up pretty soon. Like you mentioned, they're actually playing Missouri again for the first time in a long time. But that's not really a huge, so I think there's some questions about Kansas's motivation so far. And I wouldn't be surprised if Bill Self is trying some new things. I mean, in a COVID year or transfer free year where anyone has moved around and everybody has moved around, I think there's going to be some kind of shock results that happen. And that's just one of those that I think we can kind of look past.
Well, do you think they can cover 8 here against the Johnnies?
You know, I'm not interested in backing St. John's. I do think that Remy Martin can be tricked into playing a little bit faster than probably he should. But I feel like Bill Self has been working on him about that this whole game prep. And I think KU are a really good team that I don't really want to mess with. And they are a team that even, I think this is on Long Island where the Islanders play,
that new arena.
Yes.
Yep.
So like, I mean, maybe there's going to be a decent St. John contingent there, but I wouldn't, you know, there's probably enough KU people in New York City, believe it or not. Surprisingly, they leave Kansas, but I think it's one of those where I'm not looking to get in the way of KU, especially coming off a loss pretty recently. I feel like Bill Self has got into them pretty good.
Let's go to the Pac-12 for the next game, and I believe this one is a Saturday game. USC -3 at Washington State, and both these teams played last night, and it felt like, I mean, they both handled their business. USC beat Utah by 20. They really kind of controlled the game start to finish. Washington State's was a little bit different. So I'm going to tell you about the first. Did you watch that game, the Washington State-Arizona State game?
I did not.
Okay, I'm going to give you the Cliff's Notes. Washington State missed 15 straight shots in the first half.
I saw the score.
They went scoreless for 11 minutes and 24 seconds in the first half, scored 0 points in that time frame. They shot under 25% in the first half and scored 18 points. You think, oh my God, what a disaster. Yeah, they had an 8-point lead at halftime. It was 18-10 at halftime. Arizona State scored 10 in the first half, 29 in the whole game. They made 12 shots from the field and 2 free throws. This was a bad offensive game from Washington State, and they had a dominant 22-point win on the road. Maybe that's how they win some games. And certainly you can, maybe you can get away with it against the Arizona State team that's missing their best player, is not very good on defense. It feels like USC is kind of like, you know, infield won't play you unless you prioritize defense. Like if you don't work hard on D, you don't play. Like they're down for a rock fight game. So what happens when Washington State's, you know, poverty offense has to go against a good defense? It feels like I like if the total is one in the 130s, like KenPom projects, I'll be on the under certainly. But I think that the size of USC takes over here. I feel like USC's got some real matchup advantages, and I just think they're a lot better offensively than Washington State is. What are you seeing?
So remind me what you're projecting.
-3 USC on the road.
Yeah, I'm thinking that climbs even higher than that. I'm pretty surprised about where this number is projected. I got to say, I feel like this is one of those late in the season type of USC in a back-to-back in Washington, like Sunday night or something like that, have to go in into a really sleepy situation. It's a little weird, but I think the Pac-12 are playing 20 conference games this year, so you got to find other ways to play games even before conference schedule or before the new year. But I got to say, I think Washington State and Kyle Smith was basically hired as one of those kind of forward-thinking, top-of-the-line analytics guys who clearly has brought a defense to the Palouse. And I got to say that I think Wazoo are going to make things difficult for USC, but I think what you're talking about with USC's defense and their size, I mean, I think I talked about them earlier as one of my futures. They are so tall, and I just really don't know how Washington State can score efficiently. USC has a dynamic enough of an offense that I mean, I'm not really in a stage of my life where I'm laying points on the road. But I got to say, anything less than a possession here, it's hard for me to have any interest in Washington State, because you really need them to win that game. And I don't see that happening. I think this is a good sign for potentially backing Washington State in future podcasts, I got to say, because if they're going to be rated like this, I just don't feel like the market believes in them to this level. But I think it's early, and I think Washington State really needs to prove a lot more offensively before we can just back their defense against one of the quality teams that made a deep run in March last season.
I mean, maybe it just means that Arizona State's that awful, and that's entirely possible too.
I wouldn't go all the way there, because I do think the Washington State defense has been showing some good signs as of even late last season. And even this year, I backed UC Santa Barbara, one of the top teams in the Big West, I think, who will probably be playing in March, if not in the Big Dance, maybe in the NIT from winning the conference or whatever. And that was, it ended up an 8-point game, but I got to say it was a blowout, and it came really close to covering at the end for whatever reason. But I think the Washington State defense is for real, and I think we'll see how real it is, I guess, on Saturday night.
Well, let's take a look at Gonzaga and Alabama, also on a neutral, although it's in Seattle. I don't know how neutral that is. We're going to project Gonzaga -9 here. You're probably going to have to pay some sort of a tax. You may end up getting to 10 just because it's Gonzaga. They got kind of drug into a slog against Tarleton. And that could have been... Yeah, that could have been – I mean, Tarleton, they're looking to play as slow as possible. Good for them. They made it a game, really. That you could also say, well, Gonzaga was coming down off the Duke game, maybe a good spot for a letdown. I don't think, you know, at a neutral site game against a really good Alabama team that you're going to see them, you know, let off the gas. And – after playing like the slowest non-Gonzaga-y game that they could have played, now they get a team that is like, okay, let's run. And I feel like Gonzaga is going to be looking to stretch their legs and run. They get more layups and dunks than anybody. These backdoor cuts and they do it all day now. Like their 2-point percentage is 66.66666. Like
pretty good.
2 out of 3 shots from inside the arc go in, which is wild to think about. And it's almost all, you know, bunnies and layups and dunks. Like it's free points. And you know, Alabama is going to, they're going to try to take away the three-point arc. That's what they do. I don't think there's anyone on Alabama who can slow down Timmy or really any of the Holmgren. I don't think that they've got anything down low that can really slow down what Gonzaga does. I think they backdoor cut those guys to death. If we see a total around the KenPom line, which is 161, I'm going to like the over in that game. I could see Gonzaga getting up to 90-ish if the tempo, because they'll be willing to play Alabama's tempo, and Alabama's going to want to run. I don't know if I'm not looking to probably give double digits, you know, because I do like Alabama. It just feels like if they say, okay, Gonzaga, you play our game, that's not going to end well for Alabama.
Yeah, so Alabama is a little bit difficult to me. I mean, Nate Oates is one of the big math teachers of, I think was a high school math teacher. So he's all about, like you said, deny the 3-point shot, but take only threes and layups, pretty much the Houston Rockets, which you might be familiar with from a few years back. But from what I see with where Alabama is, I feel like they're nowhere near a finished product yet, though I kind of have to admit I had higher expectations for them coming into the season. I mean, maybe a weird tournament where you lose a game to Iona that was pretty close back and forth. But I feel like I've been kind of following along with how their games have been going, and they've not been as impressive as I expected, especially with how they ran through the SEC last season and then had a decent run in the tournament as well. I feel like I think you're onto something with the style of play and the pace. I think 161 is probably pretty high for me at a neutral. I think the what used to be the KeyBank where they're playing in Seattle, I think should have a decent amount of, I mean, Spokane's pretty far from Seattle, I think, in the great state of Washington. But ultimately, I imagine that there's a pretty decent settlement of Gonzaga alum and that alums in that area. But in terms of like what I would need to back Alabama, like my question goes all the way back to Chris Beard earlier this season, not double teaming Drew Timmy, I think, because he was so afraid of the 3-point shooting if they collapsed. And I imagine that Alabama with Nate Oates will probably be in a similar type of situation, which, I mean, I don't really know how you defend Gonzaga. And I think we both talked about it earlier this season that we don't expect them to be as good as they were last year. But if people are going to single cover Drew Timmy, I don't really know how you can compete with a Gonzaga offense. And Alabama's really going to have to shoot their lights out in order to really, I think, even hang in this game. So I'm looking far away from trying to back Alabama in this type of situation.
So you think it could get ugly as well then?
I mean, the way it doesn't to me is Alabama shoots well and can play a high pressure defense, but I really don't know. And I'm hoping that I can sign myself to not fade Gonzaga this season, because I feel like the numbers are going to be huge, and that's not really new for Gonzaga. But I think, as we said, we're a little bit down on them coming into the year. I just don't know how you stop their offense. And in games that get ugly, they get ugly really fast when you play a team like Gonzaga.
All right, let's get into the best bets portion of the podcast. I'm actually going to look and see, like, I've got a projected line, but we're, you know, pulling back the curtain. It's a 6:30 Vegas time, 8:30 where you're at. So we may have official lines for tomorrow's games, which my best bet is tomorrow. So let's get into yours, a Saturday game, and I'll see if we can get a fair line for the game tomorrow.
Sure. While you're doing that. So I'm looking at Southern Methodist. I'm actually recording this podcast live from just a few minutes away from their campus, but not really a fan, so that's not going into this. But I see SMU as a 2-point favorite at home to Vanderbilt, and that line gives me a little bit of a question and makes me wonder where this number will close. But I'll give you SMU all the way up to -4. I think that they're kind of got off to a slower start than anticipated or they wanted. I backed them at Oregon, which doesn't look like a very good loss considering how poorly Oregon has been playing. But it was one of those nights where Oregon made all their shots. And I feel like that's something that happens, and it's just something you got to deal with. SMU has certainly struggled a little bit with a neutral court loss in overtime in Mizzou. That's not a great showing. And then Loyola Marymount is pretty decent, I think, but still not a loss that I was expecting. But they bounced back from those two losses with playing a little bit better. And I think this is those kind of that the poor performance so far has given us some value to go against a Vanderbilt team that has been one of the worst in the SEC for years. I'm not trying to lean on that as much, but watching them and actually losing a bet against them on Winthrop at home a few weeks ago, I just, when I look at Vandy, I feel like there are a lot about Scottie Pippen Jr., who is a good player in his own right, but I feel like isn't enough to really carry a team against a decent SMU club who I think are in need of a good performance, and I think they'll get one at home.
I think, I mean, you've actually talked about this on the pod, playing first halves. Like SMU is the reason why people are looking to play first halves of games, because they're just like they're getting out to these big leads and then they're just falling asleep.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually thinking more about first halves for underdogs, because with fouling late, that can really kind of skew the final score. I'm actually watching Oral Roberts right now, who I took first half, who didn't show up for the first 10 minutes. Go ahead.
I'm on Oral Roberts tonight, too.
Yeah, I mean, they're hanging around, and I'm hoping that they cover the game, just for anyone that doesn't bet first halves. Will I take full games when I throw them out there? But, you know, it's one of those things where I think with favorites, you really want to get as many opportunities to cover the spread, and you might be paying a little bit more for a full game line, but you do get those fouls at the end. And if you project the way you're expecting, that's a much better points per possession thing than you'll get the rest of the game.
Okay, so we've got a fair line, and it's actually a consensus line. It's everywhere you look.
Great.
For my best bet. So, your best bet, what we're saying, SMU down to four?
So SMU minus two all the way down to minus four. I was surprised to see this line so low, and so maybe I wanted to give, and I actually asked you before the pod because I wasn't sure if that line kind of stunk to you. But
yeah, I don't think it goes past four, so I think you're probably good saying cool, four, because cool. KenPom makes it two. I think four is a very safe line to draw.
Great.
My game is going to be tomorrow night, and it is Charleston plus eight at Furman. And we've seen Charleston go from 250 to 213 in KenPom since the season started. And obviously, I think a lot of the KenPom projections were looking at last year's team, which you can't really compare to this season's squad. Pat Kelsey, who, if you're a college basketball nerd, you know that Pat Kelsey was at Winthrop, the team that, you know, was 23-1 going into the tournament and kind of gave Villanova a push in the tournament last year. That coach goes to Charleston. Suddenly, Charleston goes from like the 260th tempo team to number one in the country. And that's it's tough for teams to adjust if you haven't seen a team play at the pace that Pat Kelsey pushes his teams at. It's not easy to adjust to. Their only two losses this year have been to North Carolina and Oklahoma State. And the North Carolina game was actually a fairly close game. The Oklahoma State final score was OSU by 30, but that doesn't really tell the whole story, because this would have been a great first half bet for you. Charleston had a lead with 2 minutes to go in the first half, but then the depth kind of just started to grind on them. And you know, listen, the Oklahoma State's got a lot more talent than a team like Charleston does. Furman is good. They're not as good as they were last year. They were kind of a darling last year. They lose Noah Gurley to Alabama, who we were just talking about.
Yep.
That probably has a lot to do with why they're not as good inside as they were last year. I think we're getting a discount on Charleston because their uniforms don't say Winthrop. And it's not that – I'm not trying to say this is the same squad, because it's not. Charleston doesn't have the inside scoring presence that Winthrop did last year, but they do have better outside shooters. And again, this tempo is just really tough for teams to adjust to, especially teams that don't have superior talent. And so North Carolina, Oklahoma State, those teams, they can eventually adjust. I think a team with, you know, slightly better or equal talent, it's going to take some time. So I like Charleston getting 8 points at Furman.
Yeah, just looking at Charleston, I think it's really hard to argue with what Pat Kelsey did at Winthrop. And I actually was going to bring up Gurley's absence. And I feel like Furman, they've always been a really good team for the past like handful of years, but have never really been able to click. And I think closing games is a problem for them. Saw that happen early this year in an overtime loss at Belmont. I just feel like that kind of issue that they've had for a long time hasn't been solved, and getting 8 points, even if there's a little funny business at the end with fouling, it's going to really test them to close out a game against a quality coach for sure.
So that'll do it. There are our best bets. SMU minus two all the way to -4 on Saturday. And then Friday night, Charleston +8 at Furman. So hopefully we can keep the best bet train rolling. I'm up to 2-3. You are at 3-2 now. So the pod as a whole is at 500. I'm feeling it, man. I feel like the run is beginning. That 2-0 last week really got me feeling good. So I'm excited for this weekend. Should be a good weekend of hoops. Griffin, appreciate it, man. Been fun. McKenzie, Brad, thank you guys. Thanks to everyone out there listening. And we will have another episode Sunday night, which I think actually we've been getting those episodes out Sunday night. So they're sitting there waiting for you Monday morning, folks. That's what it's all about, making you happy. So we will talk to you guys then.